No matter what you've heard, if you like your doctor or healthcare plan, you can keep it.
But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it.
Hello and welcome into this Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here. I'm your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and a bit of absurdity. In the studio for this Thursday, January 23rd, 2020 edition of the podcast. And there is much to talk about today. And, it's not all dull, boring impeachment stuff. There's more. Thank goodness there's more. Because people, honestly, people aren't paying attention. The only people paying attention are politics junkies and news people. Those are the people paying attention. Go to the airport in your city today and go stand around and look at what people are watching on the televisions. Of course, CNN pays to be on TVs in airports across America. If you've ever wondered how it is they get on the TVs in airports across America, CNN actually pays the airports to be on their televisions. It's a deal. They buy the audience that's trapped in the airports. That's how they get their viewership. Now, look at who is watching those televisions. Nobody. No real, sane, normal people are watching those televisions. Only the people who have an interest in the political beast are watching the TVs in the airports. And you'll find that's true pretty much anywhere. If you go into a restaurant or a bar and you see the TV, it's going to be on sports, probably. It's not going to be on a news channel. And that's because, by and large, people don't care about what's going on. They see through what's happening. And because of them being able to see through what's happening, they don't care. They know the outcome is going to be, and they've pretty much seen all they want to see. America saw everything they needed to see about the nature of those at odds in this standoff during the Kavanaugh hearings. And during the Kavanaugh hearings, they got a really good taste of what this was all about. It was all about Democrat dominance. That's what this was about. Losing an election and pitching a hissy fit until they could get their way. That's what it amounts to. We'll talk about that and some other things today. And we will revisit a story from yesterday. In fact, we'll do that first. We'll also be talking about polling. And I do want to get into into polling and the nature of it, because there's a lot of poll results being plastered across the screens on the news channels and on the evening news today. And you see them in social media. People are posting polling results, talking about the president's popularity, talking about his lack of popularity, talking about the number of people who say they're going to vote against him. And we'll talk about polling. That comes up in just a few minutes. But first, back to a story that we talked a bit about yesterday. Iguanas. Yes, from the Tampa Bay Times, there's a story on what's been happening to iguanas because of the cold weather. Let's start off. Mango season may be months away, but if you live in South Florida today, your trees may be ripe for the picking of iguanas. Iguana meat, dubbed chicken of the trees, started showing up on Facebook Marketplace overnight as the temperature dipped into the 40s. The green iguanas are an invasive species, stunned lifeless by South Florida's occasional cold snaps, and they die if the chilly weather holds. The National Weather Service even tweeted to watch out for falling iguanas. I told you about that yesterday. Well, that apparently makes them easy pickings for backyard harvesters. Several ads for skinned and butchered iguanas, looking like Peking, well, not duck, were posted in Miami, Doral, and Homestead. Some of the ads, however, were posted days ago and show iguana meat that has clearly been frozen. Not by the South Florida climate right now. At least one ad showed what looked like freshly prepped garabo, that's a name often used as interchangeable for iguana in parts of Latin America. The animals may be slightly different species, but both are often found as invasive in South Florida. But can you actually eat them, or should you? Well, you absolutely can. As long as the food comes from a reputable processor. That's according to the University of Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Species. They're commonly hunted in Central and South America and parts of the Caribbean and are an economical source of protein, according to the organization's post. They say, there is a reason why these invasive iguanas are hunted in their native countries as food, to the point where they are considered endangered species. That's what Frank Mazzotti says. He's a professor of wildlife ecology at the UFIFAS Fort Lauderdale Research and Education Center in Davie, Florida. He goes on to say, they are excellent to taste and they're a great source of food. The iguanas should be treated like chicken for preparation to safety handling since they carry salmonella. Yeah, they do. According to Brenda Marti Jimenez, a UFIFAS agent, some say they look like alligators or mini dinosaurs, and others say they look good for dinner. Because of the salmonella risk, IFAS warns not to try to make iguana ceviche. Instead, the meat should be cooked through to at least 165 degrees. Ceviche, if you're not familiar, is it is preparing meats. It's done with fish a lot. Using citrus juices. The acids in citrus actually cook the meat. So they say don't do that. You need heat to kill off the salmonella. Just in case you're preparing that iguana barbecue for this weekend. I'm just saying. Just want you to know. For my listeners in South Florida, make sure you cook the meat. Use a cooking thermometer, a barbecue thermometer, and make sure you're getting that lizard up to 165 degrees, okay? Got to do that to kill off the salmonella. If you need recipes, including one for iguana taco, you can find those. The IFAS provides them. Those are for people who aren't accustomed to. They aren't accustomed to cooking iguana. It's suggested that an easier route may be to make iguano tacos or burritos. Okay. I don't know what the studio dog's upset about. Maybe I got too loud. Did I get too loud for you? What are you barking at? Somebody pounding on the door? I don't know. Anyway, she barked the first time. I didn't know. What was that noise? Nah. At any rate, so if you're preparing an iguana barbecue this weekend, if you are looking at if you're looking at having some of that good old tasty iguana meat, some good old garabo for the weekend, well, make sure you use that barbecue thermometer and you cook properly, okay? Okay. The things that people eat, it's just amazing. You know, we talk about, we kid around sometimes about the dietary habits of other cultures. You go to the food markets, the open markets in different countries and take your chances. What is this? Don't tell me. Don't tell me, I just want to taste, you know, and I've never done that, but you see it on TV a lot where people are wandering around the open markets in foreign countries and they're trying things off the grill and they're rolling their eyes and talking about how great that is. And then they ask what it is. Oh, that's not me. Trust me. Iguana. It's what's for dinner. I mentioned that we wanted to talk about polling today, and we've got just a couple of minutes here before we hit the break, and I want to share with you something that I ran across on Twitter this morning about polling, and I think it's a good thing to know. There's a guy, his name is Bill Mitchell. He posts on Twitter, and he does a video blog that he does frequently, and he said, allow me to make a comment about independence in polling. An odd thing we've seen in polling since 2016 is the introduction of the massive independent sample. For instance, a recent CNN poll was 42% independence. Turnout in elections has never been, nor never will be, 42%. To understand why media polling does this, you need to look at Gallup. In 2016, Trump won independence by 4 points. Yet, according to Gallup, they disapproved of him 2-1 by Inauguration Day. A seismic and impossible shift. So what is happening here? Pollsters got caught red-handed and red-faced in 2016 because they were using D plus 12 to D plus 16 samples to predict a landslide Hillary victory. To avoid that this time, pollsters have wildly expanded the independent polling size and are hiding the Democrat oversample there. Again, Gallup claimed by Inauguration Day that independents opposed Trump 2-1 despite the fact that he won them by 4. That's our signal. They are burying the big lie in independence. Additionally, while Republicans were 33% of turnout in 2016, the typical poll uses only a 24-26% sample. So how do you keep Trump approval buried in the high 30s and low 40s? You undersample Republicans by 7-9 points and wildly oversample independents, who are really reclassified Democrats. Then you use these fake numbers to drive the narrative that Trump is very unpopular. This is why there is the troubling disconnect between Trump RNC donations and rally crowds and polling. The polling is not only fake, it is very, very, very fake. After all, media is paying for polling. And if you claim Trump is at 60% approval, you won't get hired to poll again. But that's not all. Recent impeachment polls have been polling adults only, a highly inaccurate sample, which leans Democrat by 6%. Add this to the undersample of representatives, Republicans and Democrats buried in the independents, and your average media poll is Democrat plus 12 to plus 20. Yes, folks, it's worse than 2016. This is how you get 50,000 people at a rally for a president who is supposedly at 40% approval rating. This is how you have record fundraising for the RNC, but the DNC is broke. The polling is fake. And this is what I've been telling you for a while. Polls are not used to reflect public opinion. Polls are used to influence public opinion. It's a political tool. It's not an accurate representation of what's really happening. It is merely a political tool. It's used to change minds. You see, if you see enough polling telling you that a candidate is unpopular with the majority of Americans, you begin to subconsciously question your decision to support that candidate. You begin rethinking. It's really what it is it's scientific peer pressure. That's what polling actually is. It's quoted by the news media. You see it published on social media. You see the polling results everywhere. And if you're savvy, if you know the facts, what I've just read to you, if you know what's actually going on, that the Democrat independent sample in voting is not really independents. It's a mix of independents and Democrats and Republicans who disapprove. You realize that the polling results are being intentionally skewed. And why the intent? What's the reason? It's to convince people that they are believing in and supporting an unpopular candidate. That's why. The purpose is to convince you that you're wrong. That's why. Remember, polling doesn't reflect public opinion. It's there to influence public opinion. This, the link to this story with all of the information in it is in today's show notes. Make sure you get today's show notes. You'll want to read through this yourself and you'll want to do your own research to get to the bottom of things. I know there was a lot of facts and figures involved, but the bottom line is polling is fake. It is possibly one of the earliest examples of fake news, when you think about it. Because the news media relies on polling in a way to substantiate their position on issues. So, when you see polls in the news, when you glance up at the TV, wherever you happen to be, or you're looking through your social media, and you see that President Trump is polling at way below 50%, 50% approval rating, remember that the polling samples are deeply skewed. And they're deeply skewed for a reason and a purpose. Just keep that in mind. More after the break, when the Daily Perspective continues. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. The Thursday, January 23rd, 2020 edition of the podcast. So far we've talked about iguanas and I gotta be honest with you, I've never actually thought about barbecued iguana, but now I may have to find it for lunch. I'm having lunch with Brian Burns today, and I may have to send him a text message and ask him, hey, you know any place that serves iguana? Oh, well, anyhow, it is a wet day in our neighborhood. It looks like we're going to have some rain and then clearing off. And I'm happy for that it's clearing off and we don't have one of those long stays with precipitation like we did recently, where it just rained for days and days and days here, because my wife and I have got a road trip this weekend heading to Pensacola to visit my dad. And I just really don't want to drive down to the coast in the rain and come back in the rain. It's just not, no. I don't like driving at night. I don't like driving in the rain. And I really, really hate driving at night in the rain. So anyway, there we go. Why did I talk about it? I don't know. Well, impeachment. We can't stay away from it any longer. Impeachment. The whistleblower is the one who supposedly started all of this, although we know from what people have actually said in front of TV cameras, microphones, God and everybody, that they've been planning impeachment since the day after the election. But the whistleblower was a key, was an excuse, was a reason to move forward and, doggone it, we have to impeach. Well, the man suspected to be the whistleblower who sparked the impeachment of President Donald Trump over a phone call with the president of Ukraine, by the way, which he didn't hear. He did not hear. He was told about the phone call by someone who actually was on the call, but he had nothing to do with it. He reportedly openly discussed how to take out Trump, not even 2 weeks after Trump took office, well before that call took place. Real Clear Investigations reported yesterday that sources overheard the CIA analyst and alleged whistleblower discussing how to remove Trump from office with fellow Obama holdover Sean Misko, who reportedly offered guidance to the alleged whistleblower during the impeachment process under Democratic Representative Adam Schiff. As noted by Real Clear Investigations, there is strong evidence that the man identified in the report is the whistleblower, though he has not been officially named as such. Resources told Real Clear Investigations the staffer with whom the alleged whistleblower was speaking was Sean Misko. Both were Obama administration holdovers working in the Trump White House on foreign policy and national security issues. That's what Real Clear Investigations reported yesterday. They go on to say, and both expressed anger over Trump's new America First foreign policy, a sea change from President Trump, Obama's approach to international affairs. Just days after he was sworn in, they were already talking about trying to get rid of him, according to a White House colleague who allegedly overheard the conversation. They weren't just bent on subverting his agenda. They were plotting to actually have him removed from office, the source adds. Another source said the alleged whistleblower and MISCO didn't like Trump's policies, adding they had a political vendetta against him from day one. They emphasize that the apparent discussion about Trump's removal prior to the Ukrainian call undercuts the narrative that impeachment developed spontaneously out of the patriotism of an apolitical civil servant. The actions of the two men were part of a larger pattern of coordination to build a case for impeachment involving Democratic leaders as well as anti-Trump figures, both inside and outside of government, says Real Clear Investigations. The conversation between the two Obama holdovers took place during a staff-wide NSC meeting, called by then National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. The report says the all-hands meeting, held about 2 weeks into the new administration, was attended by hundreds of NSC employees. They were popping off about how they were going to remove Trump from office. No joke, according to an ex-colleague. A military staffer says, after Flynn briefed the staff about what America First foreign policy means, the alleged whistleblower turned to MISCO and commented, "We need to take him out." And MISCO replied, "Yeah, we need to do everything we can to take out the president." By taking him out, they meant removing him from office by any means necessary. They were triggered by Trump's and Flynn's vision for the world. This was the first all-hands staff meeting where they got to see Trump's national security team, and they were huffing and puffing throughout the briefing anytime Flynn said something they didn't like about America First. The source continued, adding that the alleged whistleblower told MISCO they can't let Trump enact this foreign policy. He goes on to say it was so shocking that they were so blatant and outspoken about their opinion. And this military staffer noted that superiors were quickly notified. He says they weren't shouting it, but they didn't seem to feel the need to hide it. So here we have two Obama administration holdovers. The whistleblower at MISCO, Sean MISCO, talking, not quietly, and not secretly either, about the need to take the president out because he was dismantling the disastrous policies of the previous administration and instituting an America First policy. Hey, we need to take care of things here. This makes perfect sense. It makes complete and total sense to take care of America, to make sure America is protected, to make sure that our interests are taken care of, instead of doing what the previous administration was doing. Remember the international apology tour? That was kind of the beginning of things, when Obama went around the world apologizing for how horrible the United States was and promising, "We're going to behave ourselves from now on. We're going to help you guys." And the result is that our national security started to become a shredded mess. We have illegal immigration skyrocketing. We have terrorism on the rise. We have international discord and all kinds of things coming apart at the seams, because the bullies who had been kept at bay prior to the progressives dismantling our foreign policy, the bullies no longer felt contained. They never felt like the U.S. was a threat to them. And so they decided to up the ante and misbehave even more. I've used the illustration about children before. If you're a parent, you know that if you don't maintain a firm hand, and I don't mean an abusive hand, I mean a firm hand. If you don't stand strong, if you don't stand your ground, if you don't follow through with what you say you will do if your kids cross the lines you draw, then before long, your kids are running things. You're just trying to keep up with everything. The same applies to dealing with foreign powers who want to take over the world and have the world submit to them. If you don't let them know that this will not stand and back what you say up with actions, then they will keep pushing the envelope until they find out just how far they can go. And when they do that, they're hurting people. People are dying. So you have to, as the world's superpower, you have to stand up, stand straight, draw the line in the sand, and then tell everybody what happens when they cross it. That has to happen. It doesn't mean you're the police force for the world. It doesn't mean any of the negative things they would like you to think it means. It just means that you have to be the deterrent. And if I can use that illustration of being a parent again, it's like drawing that line, and when that two-year-old sticks his lip out and crosses the line, swift judgment happens. Not negotiation. Not now. Remember what we talked about. Swift and decisive judgment happens. So they understand, ooh, mom or dad was serious. And they will pitch a fit. They will whine. They will cry. They will roll around on the floor. But you stand your ground. And they learn. Sadly, the Obama administration was more inclined to negotiate with the misbehaviors. And the result was disastrous. And not just for the United States of America.
So crazy someplace else. We're all stocked up here.
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. It is the Thursday edition, January 23rd, 2020. And it's great having you along. Thank you so much for being there. I try to say this every day, and I really do mean it. I appreciate the fact that you subscribe to the podcast or that you join in live on Facebook Live each morning. Monday through Friday, 5 days a week. Oh, my goodness. It's good to have you along. Thanks again. Well, we just talked about how the whistleblower actually said loud enough to be overheard in meetings just mere days after the election that they were going to have to take the president out. They're going to have to get rid of this guy. They got to do something about this guy. And the reason was he was dismantling the disastrous policies of their beloved Barack Obama. That's why. We know because they have said so publicly that they were talking about impeachment as early as the day after Election Day. We know that that Jerry Nadler, for one, campaigned for his position doing what he does now after the 2018 midterm elections. And his chief point for campaigning, his big promise was that he was the guy to impeach President Trump. We know they've been planning this. We know they've been planning this for quite some time. And yet, on Tuesday, Hawaii Senator Democrat Mazie Hirono served up a whopper by claiming that Republicans have been spreading a weird conspiracy theory that Democrats wanted to impeach Donald Trump since he was inaugurated. Quote, "What I found astounding was that they're still saying that we were out to get the president from day one, some sort of a weird conspiracy theory that I have to say even Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh brought up." She was on MSNBC when she said this. Brett Kavanaugh infamously blamed Trump hatred for the smear campaign against him during his confirmation hearings. Remember, he said, "This whole two-week effort has been a calculated and orchestrated political hit fueled with apparent pent-up anger about President Trump and the 2016 election. fear that has been unfairly stoked about my judicial record, revenge on behalf of the Clintons, and millions of dollars in money from outside left-wing opposition groups. Everything he said there was true and can be backed up. For Mazie Hirono to claim Democrats haven't been out to get Trump from the earliest days of his presidency is just bizarre, especially given the evidence. Representative Maxine Waters has long called for Trump's impeachment. Within weeks of his taking office, Waters was talking about impeachment. On February 3rd, 2017, Waters was asked about what to expect from Trump over the next 4 years. She said right off the bat, "Well, I hope he's not there for 4 years. My greatest desire is to lead him right into impeachment." This wasn't an isolated comment either. A couple of days later, Waters said, "When I've talked about leading him to impeachment, what I'm really saying is he has done enough in a short period of time for questions to be raised about whether or not he's acting in the best interest of this country." Maxine Waters' obsession with impeachment continued. On Tax Day 2017, Maxine Waters led a chant at a rally calling for Trump to be impeached, not for any crime, but because, quote, "he's not working in the best interests of the American people, which is really to say, I don't like his policies, so..."
Impeach 45! Impeach 45! Impeach 45! Impeach 45!
This is April 15th, 2017. This is, what is it? It's just under 4 months after his inauguration. What about other Democrats? Well, I'm glad you asked. In May of 2017, Representative Jared Huffman, Democrat of California, was also ready on the impeachment bandwagon. He said in a tweet, "Impeachment will happen if handful of Republicans in Congress and join Dems to put country above party. Or in 2019, after Dems win the House." In 2017, articles of impeachment were introduced in the House on two separate occasions. This is 2017. Remember, he was inaugurated in January of 2017. The first time was in July, just 6 months after Trump took office. That was by Representative Brad Sherman, the Democrat from California, and Representative Al Green, the Democrat from Texas. The second time was in November of 2017, with articles of impeachment introduced by Representative Steve Cohen, a Democrat from Tennessee. The push for impeachment absolutely began right away and continued. It has continued almost nonstop. Hirono, dismissing this as a conspiracy, tells you she knows that her party's longtime obsession with impeachment undermines the legitimacy of their current efforts. And she's not the only one who knows. Everyone knows this. Remember, I've said to you several times that I thought that Maxine Waters knew exactly what the overall plan was. She had been in the caucus meetings. She had been face-to-face with the people making the decisions from the very beginning, and those people were all agreed that impeachment had to happen. And thus, every time she got the opportunity...
Impeach 45! Impeach 45! Impeach 45!
At one point, they actually cautioned her, and she has said publicly that they've told her she needs to calm that down. But she was going to continue pushing for impeachment. They cautioned her because they didn't want that out of the gate too soon. Well, it was out of the gate. She started talking about it on tax day of that year. Impeachment was submitted. Articles were submitted. Well, not too long after that. People have been pushing for it since the very beginning. The harpies on The View talked about it the day after Election Day. So it's been on the table from the very beginning. And now we look at the way things are happening right now. And we see, wow, they have been talking about this for a long time. The thing is that they don't have a case. There's nothing constitutional about anything they're claiming. And it's becoming more and more obvious with every passing day. The Democrats hailed Adam Schiff's speaking yesterday, talked about how brilliant it was. But he keeps hashing up the same things that have been disproven time and time again. There's a word they keep using, too. In a column published at law.com in December, one commentator argued that senators who refuse to be impartial should be disqualified from participating in the impeachment trial of President Donald Trump. A few days ago, an ethics lawyer from the George W. Bush administration called Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell a perjurer for taking the oath to do impartial justice in the trial after saying he would not be an impartial juror. They might want to reconsider their position. If these people really mean what they say, of course, any senator who has taken a position on the president's guilt would have to bow out. In that case, say goodbye to Senator Kamala Harris. Monday, January 13th, she spoke on the Senate floor and stated as a fact, that Trump pressured a foreign nation to interfere in our elections. That's almost a word-for-word recitation of the first impeachment article, which states that Trump solicited the interference of a foreign government in the 2020 United States presidential election. Harris went on to say that it is unacceptable for a president to shake down a vulnerable foreign nation for personal or political benefit. This, too, echoes the first impeachment article, which claims that Trump used the power of his office to obtain an improper personal political benefit. If publicly accusing a defendant of the public of the specific offense for which he's been impeached in virtually identical language as that impeachment is not refusing to be impartial, what is it? Harris, however, is far from alone. Senator Mazie Hirono, who we just talked about, who'd rejected the presumption of innocence during the confirmation process for Justice Brett Kavanaugh, has said she would vote to convict unless Trump could actually exonerate himself. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, the Democrat from Rhode Island, says that the impeachment articles are supported by a wealth of undisputed facts, his words. And Senator Richard Blumenthal, the Democrat from Connecticut, was even more direct, saying that, quote, the case is clear. President Trump tried to trade away our national security for a personal political favor, end quote. As if reading directly from the same talking points, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, the Democrat from New York, says, quote, the President Trump put our national security at risk in order to obtain political favors, end quote. Senator Christopher Murphy, Connecticut Democrat, insists that the bottom line is this: President Trump abused his authority by using taxpayer-funded aid to pressure a foreign government to help him win re-election in 2020. Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer has similarly attacked McConnell, accusing him of refusing to be impartial. Yet, as CNN has reported, leading up to President Bill Clinton's impeachment trial, Schumer repeatedly said that the Senate is not like a jury box. Indeed, when running for the Senate in 1998, he asked people to vote for him precisely because he would be a vote to acquit Clinton. Impartiality? Anyone?
I keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
House Democrats rigged the rules to guarantee a predetermined impeachment result. Now Senate Democrats are trying to rig the jury pool by trying to exclude senators not likely to convict. We all know how this is going to end. We need to try this impeachment and move on. But we won't be allowed to move on because the Democrats won't let us have that. They want this to keep on going. They want to keep rolling in the floor pitching their fit.
Oh, yeah!
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Diving into the final segment for this Thursday, the 23rd day of January. It is, hang on a second, am I right? Let me look at something very quickly here. I just remembered something, you know, it's funny how you remember things that you meant to address, and it's just like, wait a minute, am I right about that? So, let me go pull this up here and absolutely have a look and see. Come on. Yes, I'm absolutely right. Today, this is episode number 150 of The Daily Perspective. Hard to believe it. There have been 149 episodes before this one. I know. It's like we just rolled out of bed this morning and decided to do a podcast. But this is episode number 150. And I appreciate those of you who've been along for the whole ride. Thanks a lot. I do appreciate you being there. Let's get back into things again. Yesterday, the office of Ted Cruz posted something that I think we need to look at. And it's about the Democrats denying that there was corruption on the part of Hunter Biden and possibly Joe Biden. Now, we've been seeing, I've passed along articles to you in show notes and on social media and the website, dailyperspectivepodcast.com, about their involvement, about how the people who were involved and the amounts of money that have been involved funneling through Burisma and other places coming back to their home, to their accounts here in the United States. And it's pretty obvious that they were money laundering, that they were doing some crazy stuff, illegal stuff. House managers, representatives Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler yesterday continued to lecture the American people and attack President Trump for fulfilling his responsibility to investigate American corruption in a foreign country. Representative Nadler said, "Can you believe that he was concerned with corruption and only knew about one company when there are hundreds of thousands that were accused of corruption?" Really? Burisma wasn't just any company. It was one of the largest natural gas companies in Ukraine. The son of the then vice president was paid $83,000 a month to serve on the company's board of directors, despite the fact that he had zero experience in oil and gas. As Senator Cruz said on Meet the Press, any president, any administration is justified in investigating corruption. And there was serious evidence of real corruption concerning Hunter Biden on the board of Burisma. You know how much Hunter Biden was paid every month? $83,000. That's $1 million a year. The company's board included another prominent American, Devin Archer, who was an advisor to John Kerry and convicted of securities fraud in 2018. And yesterday, Representative Schiff denied the idea that corruption existed altogether, saying President Trump's objective was not to encourage a foreign government to investigate legitimate allegations of misconduct or wrongdoing abroad, made clear by the fact that the investigations he wanted announced have been discredited entirely. Well, not so fast, House managers. Have you checked with the Obama White House about that? As the White House's trial brief explained, within the Obama administration, Hunter's position caused the Special Envoy for Energy Policy, Amos Hochstein, to raise the matter with Biden. Deputy Assistant Secretary Kent testified that he, too, voiced concerns with Vice President Biden's office. Indeed, Chris Hines, the stepson of then Secretary of State John Kerry, broke his business relationship with Hunter because of his lack of judgment in joining the Burisma board. Even the left-leaning Washington Post acknowledged the appearance of corruption, saying the appointment of the vice president's son to a Ukrainian oil board looks nepotistic at best, nefarious at worst. Can you blame them? Look at what Hunter Biden recalled from his time as vice president. Look at what Biden recalled from his time as vice president on January 23rd, 2018, at the Council on Foreign Relations, when he bragged about getting the prosecutor investigating Burisma fired. Quote, "And that is, I'm desperately concerned about the backsliding on the part of Kiev in terms of corruption. They made, I mean, I'll give you one concrete example. But it just happened to be, that was the assignment I got. I got all the good ones. And so I got Ukraine. And I remember going over, convincing our team, our leaders, to convincing that we should be providing for loan guarantees. And I went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kiev, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I'd gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor. And the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to a press conference. I said, "Nah, we're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, "You have no authority. You're not the president." The president said, I said, "Call him." I said, "I'm telling you, you're not getting the $1 billion. I said, "You're not getting the billion. I'm going to be leaving here," and I think it was about 6 hours. I looked at them and said, "I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor is not fired, you're not getting the money." Well, son of a bleep, he got fired, and they put in place someone who was solid at the time. And that's just one example. So there is Biden corruption. It's fairly clear. You want an example of Hunter Biden's character? Here's an example. He is currently being sued by a woman who has proven through DNA tests that he is the father of her child. He will not support this woman or her child. And he has had his financial records sealed, so the court can't get to his financial records to see how much money he actually has. This is the character of this particular person, the son of the former vice president. If you want a little entertaining reading, check that story out. Also, look up Devin Archer and find out more about him. Yeah, there was corruption. Plenty of corruption. And the Bidens aren't alone. Look up the Pelosis. Pelosi and Ukraine. Oddly enough, there's a connection there as well. There is definitely corruption. The Democrats are denying it. And when the Democrats deny something, you can pretty much count on the fact that whatever they're denying is real. It's there. I got a story here from PJ Media. The title of it is "The Top 7 Lies Adam Schiff Has Told to Boost Impeachment." And there's no way to get around it. It's written by Matt Margolis. It's in the show notes today. Please. I'm looking at the clock. I probably won't get through all of this. But let me get a start going here. Adam Schiff is a liar. Like most Democrats, he cares more about you ousting Trump than facts. So much, in fact, he's repeatedly turned a blind eye to the facts to smear Trump in the hopes of swaying public opinion against the man who dared defeat Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. It's already been proven that Democrats have plotted the impeachment of Donald Trump since he first took office. Over 3 years, they threw anything they could at him, and Schiff was doing his part to advance the narrative that Trump should be impeached by pushing bogus information and outright lying to the public. Here are 7 examples of Schiff's lies designed to boost the impeachment of President Trump. Number 7, promoting the bogus Steele dossier he knew was not credible. Any idiot could have read the Clinton-funded Steele dossier and known it wasn't credible. Schiff also had to know the information in it wasn't uncorroborated and full of inaccuracies, embellishments, and lies. Nevertheless, he promoted the dossier as a legitimate piece of anti-Trump intelligence. Except it never was. According to Inspector General Michael Horowitz's report on FISA abuse, the FBI had corroborated limited information in Steele's election reporting, and that the CIA viewed it as internet rumor. Rolling Stone even noted that the report is especially hostile to Schiff's claim that the FBI provided additional information obtained through multiple independent sources that corroborated Steele's reporting. Back then, Democrats were hoping for collusion to be true so they could justify impeachment. Anything, even blatant lies, was on the table to make impeachment happen. Number six, his repeated claims of having ample evidence of collusion. On several occasions, Schiff declared there was ample evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, that he had seen it. There's already, he says, in my view, ample evidence in the public domain on the issue of collusion if you're willing to see it. He said that in February of 2018. If you want to blind yourself, then you can look the other way. The Mueller report found no evidence, remember? None. Number five, denying FISA abuse even though he knew it had happened. And we've all seen the reports on that. We know the abuse was there. We know the lies that were told. We know. It's all out in the open now. Number four, lying about having contact with a whistleblower. Number three, misrepresenting a key text message. According to a report from Politico, Schiff mischaracterized impeachment evidence that was used during the House Democrats' impeachment investigation. In a letter sent to House Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler, Schiff claimed that Giuliani associate Lev Parnas continued to try to arrange a meeting with President Zelensky, which was based on a text message from Parnas to Giuliani that read, "Trying to get us, Mr. Z." The rest of the exchange was redacted, but Schiff clearly knew that the redacted portion made it clear that Mr. Z actually referred to Mykola Zlochevsky, the founder of Burisma, not Zelensky. Number two was in claiming Ambassador Sondland's testimony proved there was a quid pro quo, when actually Sondland kept saying, no, there wasn't. No, there wasn't. And finally, number one, his fictional version of the Trump-Zelensky phone call. He lied. He made up the exchange from the floor of the House on television in front of God and everybody. And those are just several examples, seven examples, the top seven. There are more. Adam Schiff is a liar representing a pack of liars who just want to destroy the president. That's what the impeachment boils down to. And that boils us out of this show. Gotta go. Have a great one. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the next edition of The Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.